topics we're going to discuss this morning as we get to our first Sunday roundtable. Start off, Eric Mickelson, who is with the Green Party.
Hello, Jerry. How are you?
Fine. James Pomeroy, Republican.
Thanks for having me.
And Dana Jones, Democrat.
Good morning, Jerry.
And Nicholas
Sarwark.
Sarwark. I think I have something else.
Good morning, Jerry.
Nicholas Sarwark, Libertarian. Why is it every time I get to the Libertarian name, I always get it wrong?
It's because it's all consonants.
Just call him Spear Lancaster.
You could do that.
Welcome to August 4th, first Sunday Roundtable, 301-230-0980, pound 980, and Verizon Wireless System. We have a lot of issues, folks, to get to, and we also have Dorothy Brazil, community activist in Washington, D.C., on the line. Interesting article about Mrs. Brazil in this morning's Washington Post Metro section. Mayors come and go, but one activist remains. There's some question about what her tactics are, why she's pulling people across the coals, but one would have to say that she is a darn good D.C. watch. Anyway, Dorothy Brazil, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jerry.
Thank you very much. You've heard the panel, so just speak up anytime you want to because they never give anybody else a chance to say anything.
Okay, I'll try to hold my own.
Right, hold your own. Dorothy, I'll start with you as to what's behind this whole mayoral, what can you call it, fiasco, situation, or running for the mayor's seat. What is behind it?
Well, you know, some people have called it Petition Gate because in some respects it has some similarities to Watergate in terms of the original incident. It's pretty bad, but then the aftermath in terms of the cover-up is awful. The bottom line is in the District of Columbia, our election laws require a candidate for elective office to circulate petitions. In the case of Mayor Williams, he needed to get 2,000 valid signatures on a petition in order to be a Democratic candidate in the Democratic primary on September the 10th. He submitted petition sheets that contained more than 10,000 signatures. Just a cursory review of those signatures showed massive forgeries and other irregularities. The laws of the District of Columbia have it so that the petitions are subject to public inspection and the filing of a challenge to those petitions by a citizen. Four of us in the District of Columbia did file such a challenge. Mark Sibley and Sean Snyder, who are members of the Republican Party, and Gary Imhoff and I on behalf of DC Watch, and we combined a separate analysis of the petition sheets, and a challenge went forward to the board.
So where does the mayor stand now? Does he have to do a write-in or what?
What happened was that the Board of Election had 3 days of intensive hearings. Some days the hearings would start at 8 o'clock, and at one occasion, the first day of the hearings, the hearing went until 10 p.m. that evening. After 3 days of hearing, the board made a determination that despite the 10,000 signatures, he did not have requisite number 2,000 good valid signatures that they felt confident in, and they determined that he could not be listed as a Democratic candidate on the September 10th ballot.
So by not being listed meant that he could either be a write-in or join a run as an independent.
Right. He had the option then of three things. One, he could go to the Court of Appeals and challenge the Board of Elections decision. He could run as a write-in in the September 10th primary, or he could change his party from Democrat to independent.
And lose $1 million from the Democratic Party.
Well, his campaign had raised $1.4 million. With the presumption that he'd be a Democratic candidate. If he ran as an independent in November, he would have to give up that money.
Well, okay. Was he legally required to give up that money, or was it just a moral thing?
No, it was not a moral thing. In the District of Columbia, when you establish a campaign finance committee, you indicate what office and what party you're going to run for. He indicated on his filings he was going to run as a Democrat for the office of mayor. So the Office of Campaign Finance had a preliminary ruling that he would have to make a good faith effort to inform the contributors of the situation and offer to give the money back.
Okay.
I just had a quick question. This is Dana. Now, you said that there was a cover-up regarding this. Now, from what everything I've seen in the news, the mayor has then said, I'll run as an independent, I'll be a write-in candidate. And because he's really, from my understanding, in and around working the city, he's loved by many. So why would there be a cover-up? And if he's come out and said, okay, fine, I'll run as an independent and I'll be a write-in candidate, then is this issue not over?
Well, he's running,
I don't understand,
he's running
why we're
as
still
a write-in in the Democratic primary. That is the election. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Dana, first of
not
all...
Not as an independent.
Mayor Williams is not loved in all parts of the city. I think that there have been in his administration management problems that this petition situation highlights in terms of he's not a hands-on manager. The petition is the first hurdle any candidate has to overcome in order to be an elected official, and
right,
it responds terribly.
That.
In terms of the cover-up, what has happened is that the people who could enlighten us all as regards how it happened and why is the Bishop family. Scott Bishop Sr., who was hired by the campaign to be their field director and in charge of the petition drive, and he and then engaged his son and his daughter-in-law. The Board of Elections went to extraordinary lengths to determine what was the truth, and indeed for the first time in its history issued subpoenas to the three bishop family members.
It's also my understanding, in any campaign throughout the country that you have field directors, you have campaign managers. So if this field if this field director has messed up, then isn't it his problem?
Can I answer your question? The issue is that the bishops refused to come for the 2 days of the initial hearing. On the third day, the board was so frustrated it went to court to get a court order to compel their appearance. They showed up,
okay,
and then they took the Fifth Amendment. And it was very obvious throughout the 3 days of hearings that Scott Bishop remained on the mayor's payroll.
Okay, I think Dorothy, I know I can't see you. Can you make your answers a little bit shorter because
sure.
we have a lot of
let me commend her for doing that, because it is amazing how many times you'd think that politicians would get their petitions correct, and it happens every couple of years. Somebody running for a major office messes up their petitions. And while I won't necessarily blame the mayor for the petitions being messed up, because you leave it up to staff,
right,
what I will blame him for is suing to try to get those petitions put back on, because they really are fruit of a poison tree. It was so corrupt, he shouldn't have gone to court over it.
When it boils down to it, if the mayor can't manage a petition drive for 2,000 signatures, which is laughably small in comparison to some of the things that the Maryland Libertarian Party's had to do, how well can he manage the District of Columbia?
That's exactly the point.
I think that he was also busy doing his job every day rather than walking around door-to-door getting signatures.
But
he left it up to field staff, and obviously he didn't hire the best field staff.
I can take that point, and I know that running the District of Columbia is not easy, but when this issue broke in the news, the mayor was repeatedly asked, have you looked at your petition? And he continually said no. I mean, you look at entire pages of the petition, they're not even sophisticated forgeries. They're written in the same handwriting. And this was something that was shaking his administration, shaking his ability to be a candidate. And he just has this aloof attitude. No, I haven't looked at him.
Okay.
It, you know, doesn't bother me.
All right. We're talking with Daisy Brazil, who is an activist in the... she also is the author of... of DC Watch, which is dcwatch.org?
.com.
I'm sorry. dcwatch.com, and you can get a lot of good information. But let me say that we're discussing the situation around Mayor Anthony Williams. We have our first Sunday roundtable panel. Eric Mickelson, Green Party. James Pomeli, Republican. Dana Jones, Democrat. Nicholas Sawalk, who is Libertarian. Now, I would like to tell all of you good folks, being the good Samaritan that I am.
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
Very much.
This is a little slow here this morning, you know what I mean?
Another cup of coffee.
Little slow.
I need more cue cards.
Yeah, give them a little more coffee. Double the caffeine or something, you know. We did contact the mayor's office or his campaign office to get a representative to speak also. And we were calling Ann Walker, who is his press secretary. We called them about five times on Thursday and Friday, as well as yesterday, but we got no response from that office. And I'm surprised that Mrs. Walker did not call us back. But then again, you know, I realize that she has a lot of calls. But anyway, I just wanted you to know that. Dorothy, as we kind of wind down this whole mayor's issue, if he has to have a write-in campaign, this is a very unpopular process for a lot of people, is it not?
Well, it's a very difficult process. In the District of Columbia, we're also going to have new voting machines for the first time at the September primary. Anyone can tell you doing a write-in campaign is not good in the best of circumstances, but to couple that at the time we're having new voting machines and a new voting process makes the mayor's task, you know, quite
okay.
difficult.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. We have lines open as we talk about the mayoral situation in the District of Columbia with our first Sunday roundtable. I have lines open, so get online now. And if we go on to another issue and you want to talk about that, you can still call.
You know,
301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon.
It does seem, though, even though a write-in campaign adds a couple of extra steps to the voter's vote, if no one serious runs against the mayor in the primary, it's going to be a formality. Perhaps our guest on the show would want to file as a candidate and run against him to
yeah.
point out the corruption.
No. I made the challenge simply for the reason because I could not let this stand. Wholesale election fraud cannot be tolerated.
Could anybody come out of the woodwork and wear?
It's almost like Baltimore City.
I know the Times called him Teflon last week, but everybody's saying that this guy can't be challenged. Couldn't someone come out? He came out of the woodwork.
Well, he might as well run as an independent, given
right.
that Mickelson. He keeps supporting Morella.
Well, I actually think
just like everyone
know,
else.
I'd like to ask Ms. Brazil if she thinks that this is maybe sort of one symptom of the fact that D.C. really is a one-party city, and that in fact there isn't a whole lot of political competition. I think that there's a dismissal of a lot of the other candidates. You know, I've heard a little bit about them in the papers, but usually people say he's running unchallenged, when in fact there are at least three or four people running against
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right.
Democrats.
That's what they do say.
There's a D.C. statehood Green Party member running against him, and I believe there's even a couple of Republicans who filed
right.
a run. And, you know, whether or not these people have enormous chances of winning, it seems like...
It's always one-sided.
If you're not giving anybody else the opportunity to speak
right.
up, then you're sort of giving him a
foregone conclusions or self-fulfilling prophecies.
Well, we have a couple of solid Republicans on the city council, and they're looking at, or at least one of them is looking at running
which one?
Next time.
Which one?
Catania.
David Catania.
You know, one of the things that I have yet to find an answer to is the why. Why did this occur? And I think you might have hit on it in part. I think that because D.C. is a one-party town, you take a lot of things for granted. I think that no one would deny that there was a tremendous amount of arrogance surrounding the mayor and his campaign. They didn't see any visible competition, and so I think they did take some things for granted. I will say that, however, that as a result of this, I think the mayor will have to get out there and press the flesh and run a real campaign, and in the end, that will be the positive benefit. He will have to talk to citizens and voters.
Like a real candidate?
And I think that's the most, I think that's the healthiest thing. I mean, our system is set up this way for a purpose, and I always hate to see anyone who's not challenged. Because the whole purpose of an election is to bring the people out, is to have a healthy debate, and is to talk to the people. Now, if we have only one person running, you know, then I agree that candidate doesn't feel the need to campaign as hard. So, and I'm sure that the mayor feels this way as well, that he, you know, obviously is a fan of democracy, and I don't think that he should have a problem getting out and telling the people door-to-door his message.
Dorothy Brazil, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jared.
Always a pleasure to have you and to talk with you.
Okay.
And don't forget now, it's dcwatch.com.
Right.
And you can get even the petitions, some of the images of petitions, and just any information about
and
D.C.
All the briefs and that have been filed by both sides are on our website.
Okay. dcwatch.com. Have
Thank
a good
you.
Day.
Bye-bye.
And say hello to Gary. Okay. Dorothy Brazil, community activist, very strong in Washington. You know, someone said, why didn't she run for mayor? She's taken on a lot of it. She started with Sharon Pratt Kelly. She took on Sharon Pratt Kelly and started an investigation.
I think it's time to start a draft.
I like activists. No, I like her being an activist, you know. But anyway, let's move along. Next on the docket, let's talk about the Democrats. Dana, I'm turning to you. What's happening to the Demos in Montgomery County? Well, not Montgomery County, but
well, certainly I think in the state of Maryland
race. Yeah,
right.
In the state
right.
of Maryland.
Well,
area.
That is Montgomery County. I think that this is one of, and this is what we said from the very beginning. It's one of the most exciting races, congressional races, in the country. I think that no one can sit here and say who's going to come out of the Democratic primary.
The four candidates running against
right,
Connie Morrell.
Running against Connie Morrell. It is Super Tuesday, September 10th, is the primary for both the Republicans and the Democrats. And I think that all of these candidates, especially a few of them, have an unbelievable momentum. And we've also known that this is going to be one of the most expensive races throughout the country, not just because of the media market, because of the people that they need to reach, and because these are very educated voters. They're very active because they work in the government. They live right next to the nation's capital. And I think that the Democrats are going to give Connie Morella a very good run. I think that we're going to get a Democrat in that seat, as well as we are in Maryland, too, with Dutch Ruppersberger. I think he's going to come out as well.
Well, Jerry, I heard the debate that you put together between them, and it was a wonderful debate and a good opportunity for everyone to hear what they have to say. But the downside of that is they really had nothing to say. And I was thinking, who are these people? Connie Morella is a great representative, and she really does represent her district, and I think she's going to be reelected. I mean, everyone seems to like
let
her.
Me give a good
Mayor Williams held a fundraiser for one of the leading Democrats.
Yeah, but he's corrupt now.
He also said that he was, as a friend, he was holding a fundraiser for her, but he wasn't actually supporting her.
As long as the mayor didn't collect Connie's petition signatures.
Petition signatures.
Okay. Anyway, can I do something here, Clear Channel-wise? That form that you speak of will run, Jim. That form is going to run on our sister stations this evening on WWRC, which is 1260, and WTNT, our sister station, at 9 o'clock tonight and 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. and 9 o'clock. That forum with those Democratic candidates will run this evening.
But I also think this is a very interesting time with corporate responsibility. We just passed and the president signed a wonderful piece of legislation from Paul Sarbanes, Senator Paul Sarbanes, Maryland senator. He was really at the forefront. He's kind of the quiet senator who has been in the Senate for a very long time. He's a very responsible man. He passes corporate responsibility, and Bush signed it. But, you know, there was some corporate responsibility votes in the past, especially in April, that Mrs. Morella actually didn't vote maybe the way that her constituents are going to want. I mean, on 4/24/02, there was a vote which talked about auditing safeguards, and Mrs. Morella didn't vote the way that maybe her constituents wanted. I mean, and there's a lot of other things going on.
How many Democrats voted that way?
202 to 219 was what it failed. So I think that these are some of the questions, and this is a really hot topic throughout the country as well.
I'm more concerned for the people of Montgomery County, the people of Maryland, that it takes four Democrats and ridiculous gerrymandering in order to unseat.
It's the same district. It's almost the same district as before.
Oh, come on.
7-year-old woman.
No, it's almost the same. They just took, I think, some of Silver Spring is
just away. Different people.
No, it's the same district. She still has Montgomery County.
Okay.
Our telephone number is 301-230-0980, Bell 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. If you're too hot to pick up the phone and talk to us about our political agenda, then just think of it this way. We're kind of cool on radio. Like that? On Big 100 and Sports Talk 980. So give us a call. I have lines open as we get into our first Sunday roundtable, along with Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Democrat Dana Jones, Republican James Pumley, and Eric Michelson, who is with the Green Party.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the gubernatorial race.
Yeah, let's talk about the gubernatorial race.
Well, that was next.
You couldn't get on my.
Do you have a candidate in mind?
Is there a candidate?
No. Spear Lancaster is running for governor.
Oh.
Oh.
Really? Who's that? Spear is the first libertarian candidate running for governor in the state of Maryland. He's the first third-party candidate in 36 years. The first time that there's been a real choice. I think if you look at the other two options you have for governor, they're both very nice people.
Well, that's nice. But Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, you have to say that she came out with lots of power, but that power has been somewhat reduced. The polls show that it is a tighter race.
When you don't debate, when you don't have leadership, and when you have trouble actually making your speeches without slipping up, there is a question about whether or not you should win.
Jerry, it seems like Kathleen Kennedy Townsend is really running not to lose, in my estimation. I think that, she is trying to lie as low as possible and basically rely on the fact that a Republican hasn't won the gubernatorial race in Maryland since the late 60s. Democrats outnumber Republicans something like 2-1 in the state of Maryland, and she probably feels like if she does it on cruise control, she has a decent chance.
But she can't do it on cruise control because it doesn't look like it. Would you guys are political experts, would you agree that people don't vote along party lines like they used to? It's not traditional anymore. Even when you talk about the black or the, let's say the non-white vote in Maryland, this is a biggie because
that, is big
that has changed. That's a big issue. Look at Michael Steele.
When you take them for granted for that long, you'd be surprised how they
but
vote.
But people, young people today, when they talk about voting, they vote on issues, not on party lines.
Well, sure. I mean, you have Republican mayors of New York in a very Democratic city. You have split tickets in Virginia. I mean, I think you know people really are just picking, you know, picking and choosing from amongst the candidates.
I think that we also need to look at what who the city voted for in their mayoral race, and that was Mayor Martin O'Malley. They voted on the issues. They
2 days after he got in office, people say we're not going to vote for him again.
No, they love him. They come out in droves for him. Whether he was a Republican or a Democrat, I would say the same thing. They do love him.
Telephone number. Band doing. No.
He's a great guitar player too.
Well, I tell you, telephone number is 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call on Verizon. Get online and talk politics. That's what we're about is in America. A good thing to talk about. Larry in College Park, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question for the political experts there.
I wouldn't go that far.
You coined that phrase.
Where are they?
Well, that's what they call you, I guess. I don't know. But I'm starting to wonder if the elections in this country are real or fake. And the reason I'm wondering is, in the last election in 2000, this fellow Mel Carnahan, who was dead for 3 weeks, defeated our present Attorney General, John Ashcroft. And I got out my Constitution, looked it over, and it said you had to be 30 years old to be elected a senator. You had to be a citizen for 9 years. And it said you must be an inhabitant of the state when elected. Now, if you don't exist...
They buried him.
Clearly he didn't... Well,
right.
I know he was buried there, but we don't poll the cemeteries when we do a census.
In
Chicago.
Baltimore City.
He died in a plane crash with his son three weeks before the election. That was very sad. But what would happen, and I agree with you, because, elections are very touchy now, especially after the presidential. And I understand what you're saying, but let's, in all honesty, the party came out and said a vote for him is a vote for his wife. And now Jean Carnahan is sitting in the Senate. And that's usually what happens. When someone does pass away, the wife does take over, such as Sonny Bono, who was in the House of Representatives, she took over for her husband who passed away, which we all know Sonny Bono.
You can take over if the person's elected, but see, he never was elected. You can't be elected if you don't exist.
He's pointing out a technical problem, his name was on the ballot. I mean,
let me finish my point, though, because if you all remember in Florida at the time, we didn't know if Bush or Gore was going to win, so you didn't know who was going to preside over the Senate. The Senate was split 50-50. It was imperative if the Republicans maintain their chairmanships that Ashcroft take his seat as a senator. And, of course, the switch of Mr. Jeffords later would have been academic. Mm-hmm. The Republicans' majority in the Senate, which they no longer have, rode on the fact that Ashcroft conceded to a dead man, which is absurd. And I just looks to me like that election was planned, that Ashcroft was going to lose from the get-go, because dead people just can't win. I mean, we could dig up Harry Truman and run him again.
No, his wife was running in his place.
Look at it from both sides, though. What he's saying is his name was on the ballot even though he had died. She wasn't running. She was running for the appointment from the current governor.
Which she was given beforehand. It was under the understand, and they came out into the press and said, you know, I'm going to live on my husband's dream to serve the state and the community, and I will do that. And then John Ashcroft stopped campaigning. So did the Carnahan campaign. For the entire rest of the campaign, everyone sat still, and the people went to the polls by themselves.
It's a flaw in the election law that they really
Ashcroft
need to fix for next time.
Well,
hopefully, it will never happen again.
Well, it's actually a good safeguard.
But it could happen again.
It's a good safeguard.
It could happen again.
That the spouse takes over. If the people don't want that, they could have voted for John Ashcroft.
They should allow you to reprint the ballot
for something. In this discussion, let me remind folks that we do have lines open. If you have questions about some of the races going on and some of the politics happening in our area, 301-230-0980, #980, on the Verizon Wireless System, absolutely free call. I think, Eric, you were trying to get a word in here.
Well, I was just going to say something that James just spoke to. I think it may have been a technical issue with regards to the printing of the ballots. I don't remember exactly how close it was before the election, but oftentimes the ballots are printed up within, you know, a month before the election and then distributed to the local boards of elections. So, mm-hmm. just may have been an...
Well, it
might have been time for FedEx in that instance.
Well, I could be wrong, but I believe it was about 3 weeks.
Okay.
And they also lost their son.
Well, it's still a technicality, and John Ashcroft is now what? Attorney General.
One of your favorites.
You know, it's funny. We're talking about
the race in Maryland.
We're talking about the race in Missouri last year.
Yeah. No, we're also talking about technicalities in the election law, and I think this is the time where people start to get really confused about things. But some things, like we're talking about the mayoral race, is just simple. You know, you need so many signatures, and that's what my Florida fiangle. Secretary of State Catherine Harris' mistake on interpreting Florida's resign to run law might be excusable if she weren't the person in charge of the state's election process. The excuse she used was that she wasn't sure the law applied to her. I think this is happening all over the country. People don't know what they're doing.
Right.
People don't know what they're doing.
She's in charge of the law.
It seems almost as though...
Let's go to Louie in Brookville. Good morning, Louie. How you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. Is it Lois?
Lois.
Hey, Lois. How you doing?
It's fine. How are you?
Please save me.
I just had a comment on the discussion on Connie Morella earlier. I can tell you that people in my part of the county that no longer in her district are very, very upset about it. We have a great deal of faith in Connie, and if she did not vote for something that was mentioned earlier that the constituents wanted, there had to have been a reason. It's not that we think she's infallible, but we know that she generally will vote for what the constituents want, unless there's a good reason.
Sounds like there was some gerrymandering, Dana.
Well, no, it was Silver Spring was cut out of the district, and I will absolutely agree that everyone loves Connie. And how many times have we said this on the show? Everyone really does like Connie, but I think that Mrs. Morella has been in. She has done a good job, and there are some issues now on the table that some of the Democrats are bringing, such as Mark Shriver and Van Hollen and Shapiro. They're bringing these issues to the table that they want to talk about, and I think that it's going to be a great, healthy debate, and it's going, as a spectator sport, which these five people in this room, oddly enough, find this as a spectator sport. They like to watch. It is going to be a great, healthy debate.
Hey, Lois, let me ask you.
Yes.
I don't know your last name, so you can tell us. Are you Republican or Democrat?
I'm an independent.
You're an independent, and you like Connie Morella. What do you think will fare out of this race with the four Democrats? Do you think Mark Shriver is that strong that he can bump Connie Morella, although there's been a redistricting issue here?
I honestly don't know, but I can tell you that we're very upset about the person that's now representing us, because we don't feel that that person is going to really care about that little piece of Montgomery County.
He doesn't get there much, does he?
Representative Wynn.
Al Wynn is representing you.
Right.
He's busy now trying to get an executive elected in Prince George's County.
I live right near you, and I have that same feeling.
Right. Yeah.
It does seem that everyone loves Connie, though. I mean, independents, Republicans, Democrats, even Dana can't even work up a real good reason to vote against Connie.
Well,
You told me you think she's wonderful.
No, I think that she's a very nice person
out of this discussion about this race is the fact that the 8th District of Maryland is the fact that Mark Shriver, another Kennedy name running in Maryland or Kennedy Association, running in Maryland, was supposed to come off with dynamite.
Let's remember, we haven't got to the primary. None of these Democratic candidates are going to come out screaming in the summer and wasting their money until something is said.
But there's been a lot of screaming, Dana, within the party itself. For instance, Chris Van Hollen and Mark Schramm have been going at each other
I think Mr. Van Hollen is definitely going after the leaders of the Democratic Party, telling them, look, guys, back off. You should tune in to
Jerry's debate later this evening on Clear Channel Radio.
Right. Senator Van Hollen is definitely, I think, going after Shriver to prove that his record in the Senate is something more than Mark Shriver's record in the House of Delegates. I worked in the House of Delegates, and I'm telling you that both men are excellent leaders. They're excellent legislators. I personally worked in the House of Delegates, and I know that Mark Shriver was an amazing leader.
It's interesting, if you actually look at the polls, the most recent polls for the gubernatorial race, that Kennedy name has become more baggage than it's worth. If you look at the polls, about 17% said that made people more likely to vote for them. About 57% said that that makes them less likely to vote for the candidate.
Well, here we go.
Because
this,
that Kennedy name
here we go
is
this,
no longer
yeah, but here we
Sterling.
Go with this traditional thing again, because they're Kennedys, because they're Democrats or they're Republicans, people vote one way or the other. And it's proven a fact
but
now from a lot of studies that people don't vote
Kennedys.
That way anymore.
Yeah, I think that this is something that can be talked about any election. If there's a Kennedy, there's this, you know, underground of people who can't stand the Kennedys. I mean, come on, let's get for real. That just doesn't happen. I think these people are voting on who they are, on Mark Shriver, sure. as a man who was in the House of Delegates, as Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, who was a lieutenant governor for 8 years and did a lot for the state of Maryland.
Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, of Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call on Verizon. Eric Michelson, who represents the Green Party, James Parmalee, who represents the Republicans, Dana Jones, a Democrat, and Nicholas Sawalk, who is with the Libertarian Party. They're here this morning. They'll answer any questions, concerns, or comments that you have. And also, they'll maybe take you out to dinner if you can prove they're wrong. Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon Wireless System. We have lines open and time is growing very fast. We're looking at about 11 more minutes, so definitely get online and ask questions. My dear friends, the President of the United States, George Bush, is now on vacation. He is taking a month of vacation and light up. Economic sluggishness, the war on terror, the corporate CEO challenges being locked up and thrown to the pits and the lines, and many Americans being laid off.
Given
Mr. Bush has a month's vacation in Maine, and then he's going to his Texas ranch.
Now, given the weather around here, Jerry, given the weather around here, Jerry, would you want to stay in Washington right now?
I think the White House is air conditioned. I was listening to radio on the way over here. I obviously always listen to Jerry's show. And so y'all went to a commercial. And, yeah, can I have that 20?
I got $10.
Y'all went to a commercial. I switched over to WTOP and the Bloomberg report. You guys went to commercials.
Just say Bloomberg.
Bloomberg. Yeah. The Bloomberg report was on. And you know what they said? They called the economy a double-dipping recession. Double dipping. And that means we're going to go back into a recession, or it will just lag a while before picking back up. So let's take a vacation.
Well, I only listen to WBIG 100, so yeah. I wouldn't know about any of that.
But I don't even have it on my preset. I had to, like, flip around for it.
Can we talk about it? Is it Matt in Arlington we're going to? No, I'm not going to. Bob in Gaithersburg. Bob, help us out, please.
Well, Jerry, I think this gal that represented the Democratic Party on your team there, you really ought to fill somebody in that has some knowledge of what's going on. The redistricting in Montgomery County was a tremendous gerrymander against Connie Morella. She lost the entire top half of the county. No longer does she have Damascus. No longer does she have Olney. No longer does she have Laytonsville. She lost half of Montgomery Village, half of North Gaithersburg. And now that area, the top end of Montgomery County, is represented by Albert Wynn. The district runs from Upper Marlboro all the way to the Frederick County line. This gal just doesn't have a clue what she's talking
actually,
about.
Actually, Representative Bartlett took some of Montgomery County.
I think Dana is going to have to buy him
dinner. Yeah, buy this guy dinner. Representative Bartlett did take some of the parts that were bordering his Maryland 6th district, and those were some of the voters that didn't come out in high numbers. Whatever it was, yes, she did lose some of the top. She lost some of from
but Dana, would you
the
like, would you side. Like to, Dana, would you like to rescind your earlier statement that Connie wasn't redistricted out of
no,
her seat?
No, these people. Oh, are you kidding? Montgomery County? They vote in numbers.
To say Bartlett gave up his district, the Democratic Party chopped up the districts like they felt they should chop them up. Without regard to the constituents.
I think that this speaks to the larger issue. I mean, of course, the Democrats gerrymandered Morella in an attempt to get another congressional seat, but this happens in every state in Virginia. The Republicans did it to the Democrats.
Across the board.
And it
Utah,
speaks to the,
even in the
it speaks
yeah.
to the issue of needing to have an objective group.
Nonpartisan.
Bob, are you on the line there?
Yes, sir.
Bob, hold on. Don't leave us, okay? We're going to switch to, we're going to get somebody else from Montgomery County in on this. Frank is in Rockville. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, how are you?
Fine.
Good morning.
I was calling just regarding real quick, Captain Kenny Townsend. He's never won an election.
Hello?
Oh,
okay,
there?
Bob, are you there?
Huh?
Are you there, Bob? We lost both callers. Well, okay, there goes the double. Call me back, Frank, and we'll get you in, okay? Let's go to Ellie. Is that Ellie? Ellie in Woodbridge. Hello, Ellie.
Hi, good morning. I just had a couple of comments. I'm in Virginia now. I used to live in Silver Spring and was a staunch supporter of Connie Morella. Not so much because I agreed with her party, but just because she really does represent her people, and I think it's a shame for the people of Silver Spring what's happened. I suppose the Democrats needed that. But as far as President Bush being on vacation, it actually could be good for the taxpayers. I know every time the government's out of business, actually things get better for the country. So maybe he needs the vacation, and maybe the country does too. The other thing I'd like to say is that I heard your speaker there talk about Spiro Lancaster. And although we've moved to Virginia, because I thought it was time to leave Maryland, probably the least free state I've ever seen as far as regulations, it's definitely a Democratic state. Now that we're here in Virginia, I had the opportunity this past few months to meet with Spiro Lancaster. And I actually have contributed from this state to his campaign there in Maryland. And I wish more people would get to meet him.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like this wonderful lady who's moved to Virginia, and welcome to the great Commonwealth of Virginia. I know you're going to go out there and vote this November against the sales tax hike referendum.
There
so thank you.
He got it in. He got it in.
We have six.
Go, Jim.
Bob, are you on the line? Bob is still not on the line. Okay. Let's. Bob, thank you very much, Ellie. And Bob, I'm sorry. Maybe we can get Frank back in Rockville. again, people are critical of the president being on vacation. I'll telephone number 301-230-0980. People are very critical of the president being on vacation because he's taking 1 month when there's so much on the agenda of the American public. Eric, I'm going to turn to you. Is this right or wrong?
Well, I can certainly understand why he'd want to be out of the spotlight. I mean, it's been sort of a rather... unfortunately,
but does he deserve 1 month?
I think it's a horrible time to be going on vacation for him. I think there's a lot of issues to attend to, both domestically and abroad, and I personally don't see that it makes much sense at all.
Can I skip across the room to my good friend Nicholas?
You can. I really think he's not going on vacation so much as he's doing business from somewhere else, and I think that we're in a point in our society where it's possible to actually get things done from different places in the country. Isn't that nice?
Amen. Dana?
Yes, he is taking a month-long vacation, as we've heard from Jay Leno and everyone else who's working in their monologues with jokes. And yes, I think everyone needs a refresher. However, a month is awful long when the recession is what it is, and we have so much work here to be done. But I think that he will be working as
I hear he's
as
taking
Nicholas
a part-time
says,
job in Carson.
What he's going to be doing is he's going to be flying out campaigning all over the country for House Republicans who are in... you know, dire need not to lose their House seat is what he's going to be doing, I believe.
So he will be working for the good of the country.
Oh, yeah. He'll be campaigning, I think.
That's a good thing.
Jim, I left democracy. I was leaving you for last.
Got me backed up in a corner here.
I knew you would come off with
so
that.
So you can talk about the tax referendum.
I'll tell you. You know what? What presidents take vacations. We all take some vacations, whether it's 3 weeks or 4 weeks. President Bush has been working very hard this year. I don't think anyone's going to really begrudge him a vacation. He can get work done from wherever he is. They've got his ranch wired for everything. That he can do work from there. He can do work wherever he is in the world.
Right.
And I think it's just hard because there's a lot of people that now don't have retirements because of the economic slump, and they've lost all their money because of these. You know,
well, a lot of them lost
corrupt,
their. Well, a lot of
corrupt,
people.
Enron and WorldCom, and they don't have money to take a vacation. So that's why maybe the American people don't like it.
I think we should have public pillorying again. I think we should bring that back. I'd like to see Ken lay in the street.
As we kind of wind down, we got about 3 minutes. And if you want to call, we'll get you in at 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. The crush of the of Iraq, the story of Americans going to Iraq.
Because, Iraq's been doing a lot lately. They need to be hit.
Do we
as
think?
As the Kurds.
Should we be in Iraq, Eric?
I think that there are a lot of other issues to attend to. Even in the Middle East, I think that the issue, the Israeli-Palestinian issue, I think maybe if some of our energies and our diplomatic energies could be put into that region.
Jim Pomeroy?
I got to say, you know, Iraq's got to go. I mean,
bye, Iraq. Jim said you're going.
The leadership has got to go. We've got to free the people of Iraq just like we freed the people of Afghanistan.
Mike in Aldi, Maryland, good morning.
Good morning.
Quickly.
Very quickly, two quick comments. First of all, there's no such thing as a vacation for the president. He's on duty no matter where he is. He's in office. I don't think they should call it a vacation. He just happens to be away from the White House for a little bit. Second point, I live in Alney and have been a lifelong Democrat, but have been a supporter of Connie Morella. And I was disappointed to see her redistricted out of that area. I'm exactly the kind of person they didn't want to be able to vote for her anymore. But Al Wynn, I've met. He's a very nice person. And we'll see how well he can represent Upper Montgomery County in the next term.
To his credit, he's actually been taking some trips up there.
Yeah, he has an office there as well.
Okay.
He's been doing work out of there a lot.
Gentleman from Alney giving his input. My statement about Iraq, Dana, I'd like to hear from you.
I agree with most people on this roundtable that this is a very serious issue that we need to look into. And I also don't think that we have all of the facts that those perhaps in the administration have, such as intelligence reports and everything. Saddam has been horrible to his people. He's starving his people. He's killing his people. He's testing God knows what kind of chemicals on his own people. But I don't know exactly when and where to do this, but I do agree that this is something that we need to look into.
Well, maybe starting a war will help the economy, and that'll be nice.
People always say that, you know.
Only because it works that way.
You pay attention to Peter, and people will forget Paul. Well, I don't know if it works that way or not, if you don't have enough bread to put on your table and you're being laid off. Thank you very much for this first Sunday roundtable, folks. It's always a pleasure. Will you be back next month?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness, I tell you. What do you say, huh? Anyway, I want to thank my dear friends of the First Sunday Roundtable. And by the way, if you have comments or anything like that about our First Roundtable guests, any of them owe you dinner or anything like that because you found them wrong, you can always email us, talkdc@aol.com. That's talkdc@aol.com. Thank you very much, Eric Mickelson. Did I say Michelson?
Michelson. That's
I did
right.
say
Thank
Michelson.
You.
Eric Michelson. Green Party. He'll never come back again. James Farmley, Republican. Yeah, he's a strong man. And Dana Jones, Democrat. And Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian.
Vote for Spear.
All right. There you go. They got all their puns in. I got to get out of here. Next week, don't forget, we'll discuss back pain, something that a lot of people are discussing these days. Financial fitness on accountants. I want to thank those who helped to put it together. John Miller's our technical producer. Laurie Klein, our administrator. Quentin Jackson, public affairs assistant. Simulcast operators, Paula Casey. Written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is a Big 100 and Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Have a good day. Stay out of the heat. Much peace. Much love.